Hello and welcome to the West City Church podcast. If you'd like to get to know us more, find us at westcitychurch.com.au. We really hope that you're encouraged by today's message.
I want to talk about the offering baskets.
No, this is not an offering talk, but because really what I want to talk about is this side, not this. Oh, there's nothing in there. Not this side. We don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about the side where there's lots. it was good to hear vocalised a couple of weeks ago that you don't need to put something in this side in order to take something out of this side. And it just reminds me, I love this because I think it's a bit of a reminder about the way we function as a community, because there are times when we give, but I think my experience of church is that's been the focus. You know, I've been in, I think, 10 churches over my lifetime, and predominantly, you know, the emphasis is on, you know, what can you do? Get involved here, join this, do that, come here. And I'm not criticising churches, I'm criticising myself, because as a pastor I was sort of part of that for a long time. But what I love about West City is it recognises that at times we need to receive and at times we have capacity to give. And this speaks to me about that. I mean, the coffee's the same afterwards. You want a coffee, just go and order one. You don't have to put in order to receive. What was my next point? I did a wedding on Monday, and I just got so bound up with what I wanted to say and saying the right things and things. And I thought, this morning, you know, I did a lot of preparation. I thought, throw the notes away and let God do what He wants to do. So it's not coming out at the moment. Oh yeah, I know what the next point was. The next point was that it is very much my life experience of West City, because when we came here, we've been here just coming up for 10 years now, I worked out. We'd come back from overseas, we'd been working there for 3 years or so, leading a team of volunteers, mission workers, and we got a bit bruised and battered while we were there, and so we came home and we weren't really in good shape. We came to West City because our son Mike and his family were here, and we thought, you know, that's a good place to come. And so we came and we just didn't have any capacity to give anything. And so we'd come, we'd turn up, we'd attend. We'd come on Sunday morning and you know, enjoy and appreciate, you know, what we received. And then we'd dive for the door at the end of the service. We didn't want to talk to anybody, we didn't want to do anything. And that was okay. You know, that's the way it functioned. For me, it was about 10 months before I really started to sort of come out of my shell. Loris is still sort of struggling with a fair bit of that still, but you know, that's another story. Fast forward to the last couple of years, I mean, we've had a great capacity to give. You know, we haven't had to turn up, you know, weekdays to do a job, and, you know, we've had some freedoms around that. But, you know, I've been on the board, Loris has been heading up hospitality and the ministry team, we've been on the Common Purse group, we host a home group, we host West City dinners, welcome dinners, pilgrimage dinners. And so we enjoy doing stuff, but we weren't always like that. And I think others, it's surprising the number of visitors that come here who had a sort of a bit of a bad experience, sadly a lot of them in Christian communities. But I just want to celebrate that at West City we take permission to be who we are and not pretend that we want to get up and do stuff and feel that we need to do that. So I just want to celebrate West City as in that regard. We have a home group in our home that starts meeting this Thursday, and we try to reflect that in the way that we function as a group, you know. Anybody is welcome. You don't have to contribute. You don't have to speak. You can just enjoy the food that we provide and just suck it all in. But ultimately, you know, thankfully, people feel as though they want to contribute from time to time, and you know, it works. And so we, as I said, we're starting our group on Thursday, 7 till 9. We meet with a meal. If you want to come, this Thursday a bit of an info night. So if you want to come and take a peek at what we do, the way we do it, then you're welcome to dinner. But just let me know beforehand so that we make sure there's enough food for everybody. So that's a West City value that I appreciate and I hope you experience. I'm here to talk about the table, not so the table. The table is not a place for giving. The table is a place where we receive. We don't have to give because Jesus has done it all. All we need to do is come with an open hand to receive some emblems that stimulate us to think and feel and taste, but with open hearts to experience what Jesus is offering to each one of us this morning. So it's his table, it's his invitation for you to come, and it's his desire that you would encounter him as you do that this morning.
Take a seat. First of all, welcome to West City. If this is your first time, welcome to this wonderful community. Welcome back, some old faces that I haven't seen for a while. It's good to see you. Sorry if this is your first time that I'm the first person you get to listen to. It does get better. But we have this crazy idea at West City that December is a crazy time of year. Don't know why. A few things go on. Even at our church, we try and dial it back, but it puts a lot of pressure on our leadership, on Phil. So January is a time for them to take a step back, live their best life in Bali. You can ask him about his dirty Bali tattoo later. And it also is a really beautiful chance to give a platform to stories in our church. Because stories are ultimately what makes a community. Stories are how people share life, and I think stories really matter. I really struggle standing here as a white male being pulpited. I want to sit down there, but you can't see me, so I'm going to stand here. And today also, it's not going to be necessarily my story. It's going to be a story of somebody who's very special to me. So can I get the first slide up, Kerry? I love this church because I rocked up this morning and Kerry's like, slides don't work. but it's a place that will make it happen. So thankfully the slides worked. Can I get a hallelujah? And as a teacher, there's 100 slides that we'll get through, so strap on in. No, not really. So this is, I struggled to know how to call this, give it a title. I was going to say Stories of Grace, which kind of fits perfectly into the West City way of grace this year. But as I wrote it and rewrote it, the wisdom of matriarchs kind of kept standing out more and more. And again, this is why I struggle up here, because it's matriarchs that rule the world. And here I am as a little white boy sharing the story of an incredible woman. So I'm going to cry. I apologise for that. But I feel like vulnerability is the core of community. And if I can't be vulnerable, then I can't really open up my story. So can we flick across? All right, a little bit about me. I tend to wear a few hats. I've been here for a few years, 3 years now. And similar to Rob, I came a little bit burnt out from big churches and I needed a break. And then I started wearing a few hats. I'm the mediocre music man. Every now and then, when they're really desperate, they put me on stage. I'm the gardening guy most weeks out the back. Environmentalist stroke hippie, depends on who you ask. And my 9 to 5, I'm an outdoor ed teacher that isn't real teaching, if you ask my wife. Wait, my father-in-law is a D&T teacher, so that's not much better. Some call me an 80%er, which sounds like a compliment, sounds like I can do lots of things, but really it just means I'm kind of mediocre at a lot of things that I try. Today might be one of them. Can I flick across? So the 800-pound gorilla in the room, it is Australia Day weekend, and I just think it's really important that we frame today stepping into the space of reconciliation. And we had a meeting this week at school in the Reconciliation Action Plan Committee, and it was really good. And we talked about conciliation versus reconciliation, and have we even reconciled? I think it's hard to say that we haven't reconciled yet. As a government, we have a long way to go, but to say that we haven't takes power away from communities like this who through 200 years we have. And there's truth-telling is a core part of reconciliation. And our history started on conciliation. There's King George III, his letter to Arthur Phillip, when he started, he said, "You are to endeavour by every possible means to open an intercourse with the natives and to conciliate their affections, enjoining all our subjects to live in amity and kindness with them. And if any of our subjects shall wantonly destroy them or give them unnecessary interruption in the exercise of their several occupations, it is our will and pleasure that you do cause such offenders to be brought to punishment according to the degree of the offence." Clearly, this is a massive opportunity that we've missed. But to say that people haven't tried is also, I think, heartbreaking. It's an opportunity that we can recover together through reconciliation acts such as truth-telling and sharing stories. So today, as we meet on the sovereign grounds of Muru, on the banks of the Derby Yarragon, I would like to slow down and pay my respects to the rich stories and living legacy of the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation. On my own personal journey of reconciliation, I entered this circle with the gift of my grandmother's story, my elder, and I pray that we learn to share generously, to listen deeply, and to pay respect to the elders and stories of this land, past and present. Now, can everyone stand up for me? I forget. I'm a teacher, you're not sitting down for an hour. I wanted to do this outside, but apparently church has to still happen in this building. So this week, in this reconciliation meeting, she taught us how to listen deeply, and often we hear things, we don't listen. So she said, do this with me. She said, we listen with our ears. Everyone come along. We listen with our mind. We listen with our eyes. We listen with our heart. And we listen with our whole being. So we'll do that together. Listen with our ears. We listen with our mind. We listen with our eyes. We listen with our heart. And we listen with our whole being. And you can sit down before I get you to stand up again soon. And I would like to share you a story, before I get into my grandmother's story. It's the theme of matriarchs today. And I was walking on property with an Indigenous elder, and I was yabbering along, as I do. And she said, shh, shh, stop it. And then we sat down underneath this big old tree that I'd often taken kids to, and it's this tree, big old Jarrah tree, 600 years old. And she shares with me a dreaming story of... of hope, I think. And she says that when elders die, particularly matriarchs, die and leave this earth, they leave their legs in the ground and then they become significant old trees in those communities. And she said, the problem with Australia at the moment is we don't have enough grandmothers left. And we don't have enough grandmother trees left. And that really rocked me. And it also, if I can get to the next slide, I'm going to handball to Mel. I told you I'm not going to do the whole thing. Sorry, really quick. This is controversially from the Catholic Bible. but there's still some good things, and this really resonates with me about the story of trees and the story of old women.
It is a happy person who is concerned with wisdom and who uses good sense. Anyone who studies the ways of wisdom will also learn her secrets. Go after wisdom, like a hunter looking for game. Look into her windows and listen at her doors. Camp as close to her house as you can get, and you will have a fine place to live. Build your home there, safe beneath her protecting branches and shaded from the heat.
So can we listen to that, church? All right, I have about 10 minutes, 15 minutes to get through, and I'm probably going to cry, but that's okay. the story of, can I get the next slide? In the words of my grandmother, wisdom is the discipline of young fools and the guidance of old ladies. And the next slide. So I have a few minutes to try and do the justice to this woman. I apologise if I miss things, family. And I apologise if I go over things that should be in more depth. So Grandma Lorna, she was born at Dunstone to a big Dunstone family in Victoria, Koori country, on the border of New South Wales and the Murray River flows through. She was born on a farm, pretty poor farm, World War II, she was growing up. 1936 she was born, so that was the start of World War II and into her adolescence. Not a whole lot of money, very much hand to mouth, and that's really important. But she lived and breathed gardening, farming, helping her dad, playing with her sisters, mucking around, swimming in the canal, a very active young farming life. Cut a few years to when she's 9 years old and she's playing in the veggie patch with her sisters. This is a bit of a classic family story. How much of this is entirely true is questionable, but my family also believe don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. So she was playing in the veggie patch, end of summer, so tomatoes were everywhere. Her sister Janice, who's still with us, thankfully, picked a green tomato and threw it at Grandma, threw it at Lorna. Now, Lorna's a tough little cookie. Didn't take much, it took a lot to make her break, but she hit the deck and then ran off inside crying. She was in bed for a week, and then they took her to hospital after she had fevers, chills, pretty horrible time for a week. She was in hospital for 9 months as a 10-year-old. Now, this is 1946, so hospitals weren't particularly great. Particularly as a 10-year-old, it'd be a pretty scary place. And she was diagnosed with polio. If you don't know what polio is, look into it. It's not a nice thing at all. So she was diagnosed with polio as a 9-year-old. Pretty horrible time at a hospital. And then when she came back, pretty abruptly changed her childhood. So all her possessions, from her clothes to her toys, had to be burnt and left behind. And she stepped towards a life of forged independence with a lifelong disability. If you had the privilege, blessing, of meeting Lorna Main, wouldn't it take you long to realise that she was many things, but disabled she was absolutely not. And she would, if we ever mentioned she was, she would very much remind us that she was not. So she's a 10-year-old living on a farm. She's on crutches, so polio affected her legs. So she couldn't walk properly, so she got around on crutches, still very much as active as she could possibly be. Story picks up about another 10 years later. She's in town. She becomes a typist for a local law firm. Here's all the goss. She loved telling me of all the goss of the local Swan Hill law firm. And then that's where she met Brian, my granddad, at the age of 21. 2 years later, they got married. A couple of years later, they had kids. I won't go year by year because I'll be here for a while. 86 years is a long time. But after having a couple of kids living in Swan Hill, a small country town, rural Victoria, so she had my mum first and then my uncle second. They packed up, moved to Perth. Granddad was a mechanic, pretty handy bush mechanic, but also a bit of a cowboy. So they moved to Perth, had a job that eventually took them to Kalgoorlie, at which point they had their third child, my other uncle. Now, Kalgoorlie was pretty rough. It's still pretty rough today. It's gotten better. It was particularly a very rough mining town back then. Alcoholism, gambling were massive issues. Granddad came from a broken family. His dad was a gambler. Alcoholism passed down his line. Unfortunately, he couldn't beat it. It overcame him, and he succumbed to the lifestyle in Kalgoorlie. So it was pretty isolating for my mum and her siblings and grandmother. But again, she disabled she was not, and independent she was. So she didn't let this take over. She said, this is an interesting place, but I don't want to be here for long. So they moved back to Perth. They had a short stint in Thailand, but I won't go into that. That was another wild story. So recap, we've got a 28-year-old, survived with polio. She's got three kids, and her husband's an alcoholic. And she's had to put her foot down and say, we're going back to Perth. They followed Brian for his life because he was the head of the house, even though Grandma was the matriarch. Granddad's lifestyle continued to drive the family into poverty, gambling, alcohol. Unfortunately, this isn't an uncommon story for a lot of people. Grandma put her foot down and said, Brian, enough's enough. I love you, but you can't have, your lifestyle is impacting our family. He ended up in lockup a few times. He came home drunk. Often, Mum and her brothers had to look after him. So Grandma put her foot down and said, Brian, enough's enough. Go sort your stuff out, but you're not living with us anymore. See you later. Shipped him off to Melbourne. He was gone for 3 years, but even when he was in Perth, he wasn't very present. Grandma definitely raised the family. Grandma definitely put bread on the table, even if it was to make the means herself. So Brian at this point was gone for 3 years off to Melbourne. Education for Grandma was incredibly important. She knew it was the key out of poverty. My mum has a PhD. My two uncles are brilliantly smart engineers. And that's all to do with this woman. So she knew, despite her circumstances, education is key, and I need to put my kids through education. Granddad came back after 3 years, but things didn't really get better. He continued to drive the family into poverty. He was, from what I heard stories, he was a great mechanic and would have been a fantastic mechanic if he had got on top of things, but he didn't. Fast forwarding, again, I'm one of 10 grandkids. Life growing up with Grandma looked like foraging around the neighbourhood. That's where I get it from. I know where all the lemon trees are, fig trees are, grape trees are, even if they're in somebody's backyard. If it's hanging over the fence, it's fair game. She would always send us up, particularly mulberry season, is in September, in about Jilba. She would send us up the mulberry trees pretty sketchily high, now I think about it. And she had a bit of a tact. You don't pick it with buckets. You put a big white sheet down and you send your grandkids to the top and you shake the tree. And then you pick the mulberries up from the ground. So it was foraging, it was gardening. As I said, Grandma had a disability, but she was not disabled. It did not identify her and her identity. So she was always still gardening. She was on her hands and knees, probably where I get my green thumbs from. She was on her hands and knees, crawling through the garden, still gardening, still fiercely independent. We'd go over for household chores, which would often start with a cup of tea and an hour later up on the roof cleaning her gutters. But you can't really say no to a grandma who's in a wheelchair, is what we learned. And if we did, we'd hear about it. So as an adult, doing life with grandma, including regular visits, foraging, gardening, household chores, and she was incredibly generous with everything except her fruitcake. She'd make these wonderful fruitcakes. Strict Methodist lady, but when it came to Christmas and fruitcakes, there was a lot of booze. But it should only give us a tiny, tiny slither if we were lucky. The grandkids later on, I was in the top bracket of the grandkids. The younger one got a whole fruitcake. So I still hold that against Rob. Most significantly growing up, Grandma had a very special relationship with my cousin, Lockie. He's one of my best mates. He's got Down syndrome. The best person I know. Amazing, amazing human being. And Grandma was a carer for him. Not full-time, he still lived with his parents. Amazing parents, I've learnt a lot from them. But it was on mostly on weekends, holidays, whenever Lockie needed a break or his parents needed a break. Grandma would always spend, he would always spend time with Grandma. Grandma was a die-hard Geelong Cats fan. Any Cats fans in the house? Nah. but Lockie picked up on this, and Lockie to this day is a die-hard, avid Geelong fan. Even if you try and give him hassle for it, he won't take it. So they spent a lot of time together. She was his part-time carer. Lockie was her part-time carer. Inseparable. Every time we were there and Lockie was there, just amazing woman of grace. Towards the end of Brian's life, his drinking caught up with him health-wise, and he was put in a nursing home pretty early, early 70s. And despite the amount of grief he gave Grandma and the family, she didn't give up on him. So it'd be pretty easy to ship him off to the nursing home. He was a pretty grumpy old man at this stage. The last 10 years of his life were unfortunately dragged out, which is always sad. But she never gave up on him, never let us give up on him. He lived in a nursing home around the corner. Thankfully, we're all in the same neighbourhood. And we'd always go around and see him on weekends. She would make us go and pick up Grandad and walk him home, and Grandad would spend the weekend with her. So despite having polio, despite raising three kids by herself, despite Grandad's alcoholism, which has led to the condition he was now in, she still always, always went above and beyond. As impressive as the 83 years of incredible independence were with Grandad, she was able to close a lifelong chapter with absolute reconciliatory love and grace. And that's what we learnt, that I think the thing with the communion table and the hard thing with this church is this is a shelter at this church, which is amazing, and we've been burnt and hurt by other big churches. But what Grandma taught me is that the hardest people to love are the people that we need to love. It's easy for me at this church to love the homeless, love the people who I associate with, but it's incredibly hard to love the people who've hurt me. And Grandma first broke bread for Brian. She washed his feet. She brought him to the table and said, "You are welcome. You are always, always welcome." I remember sitting down with her she came back from this. We thought it was her last few weeks. I sat down with her and recorded her story. Thankfully, she bounced back, and a few years later, COVID unfortunately got her. But when I was sitting down with her and she's telling me her story, she was adamant that God was always good to her. Despite her challenges, despite having polio, despite having a husband who was an alcoholic, despite raising three kids by herself, God was always good to her. And she always, always had more to give. So in 2021, she died as the matriarch of our family, of her community, and of an absolute beacon of what reconciliatory love can and should be. Despite her circumstances, she was never disabled, and she always had more to give. So today, I would really like to wash her feet, but I can't. But I still think we have matriarchs in this community that we can appreciate and we can celebrate. And I have a surrogate grandmother here. Has she left, Moira? All right. Moira, stand up, give us a twirl. So today, I would like to wash Moira's feet. So Moira, if you can come to the front. I have teed this up with her, it's okay. And when I first teed this up with her, she said, "Oh, lovey, I love you, but I'm not worthy." I'm not worthy. And I said, "If you're not worthy, we have no chance." I even brought the soap. Can I get it? So if you don't know what feet washing is, it seems like this wacky thing, but it's really important signal to the table, because Jesus first washed the feet of his disciples. He knew what was happening. He knew that he was about to be betrayed. Not that more in my life is betraying me. but he still washed people's feet. And today, at the end of our service, I'm going to leave this bucket and this chair here. If you would like to wash somebody's feet, if you would like your feet washed, that's fine. But there's other ways of washing feet. And that's what I love about this community. Rob talked about there's ways of connecting and there's ways of having times we have our feet washed, which is wonderful, and other times we wash people's feet. Sometimes washing feet are gross. I worked at Athlete's Foot for my first job for 3 years, and feet are very gross. But there's other ways. We can serve coffee. This week, I can't take any credit for food for Phil and Kaz, because all I did is say we're doing it, and I had to turn people away. I had to say, no, we're full. Stop cooking meals for Phil and Kaz. So this week, I'm going to put the mic down. I'm going to wash Moro's feet. Pope Francis really quickly talks about evangelism as a way of not me as the self-righteous person preaching to the person, but I'm evangelizing to myself to realize that Christ is in Moro, Christ is in the person that I'm washing the feet of, and I'm putting Christ before myself. So I'm going to put the mic down. I'm going to wash her feet. And then she's going to do the invitation to the table, because she is truly the most worthy person that I know.
How good was that message? Thank you so much for joining us. Each week at West City, we say a benediction together. We do this because we believe that the purpose of the church is to be a caring community for the world, and that as we go and serve others, we enter into Christ's work of welcome, restoration, and healing, both for us and others. We believe that in doing so, we get to see and encounter Christ. So let's say the benediction together. We come together as the church to be reminded of the go of Christ. So we will go out and feed the hungry, go out and clothe the naked, go out and fight for justice, go out and end oppression, go out and proclaim anew the old, old story. Go out and associate with those who don't look like us, think like us, act like us, and don't even like us. And we'll do it all in the name of the one who sent us. His name is Jesus.